Movie film. Is it a movie? Or a film? Is it a movie? Great movie. Or a film? Fascinating. Is it a movie? Great movie. Or a film? Fascinating. Is it a movie? Love that movie. Or a film? Haven't heard of that. Is it a movie? My favorite movie. Or a film? I'm a bit of a cinephile.
Hey, MFers, let's get right into this thing. You're listening to movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film. It's a podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film.
That is correct.
I'm Nate, and want me to take my shirt off for you?
And I'm Terrell, and I cried watermelon. I think I said that wrong. I'm Terrell, and I cried like a watermelon. There we go.
I don't understand that expression or quote either way.
Well, it's okay. It's from Dirty Dancing. It's from Dirty Dancing.
What does that mean?
I guess because, like, watermelon, when you're eating it. Have you seen Dirty Dancing? Yeah, I saw Dirty Dancing, like, once as a kid. When you eat watermelon and it's, like, dripping down your hand. And so, like, you're just crying, like, there's, like, lots of water just running down your face.
Okay.
Yeah. Where's yours from?
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison. Okay. I don't know why I'm saying
it. Why am I saying it like that? That's going to take forever if we do that.
True.
Yeah, there's a quote from Juanita, the mammy character from Billy Madison.
There's a mammy character in...
Yeah, it's made.
Oh, I didn't watch
like
it.
Upset at one point, and then she's like, want me to take my shirt off for you?
Oh, that's the joke.
I'm sure her character has several other, like, parts where they push that archetype to the extreme, but I'm not sure, like, how knowing the usage is, or if it's just comedy.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, but it's my earliest memory of that archetype, which is a subject matter of the movie or film, The Watermelon Woman.
Yeah.
That we're covering today.
Uh-huh.
But before we get into that, let's do... I was going to say what we like to call it. Let's do what I'm hoping we can start calling.
Ooh, a name.
The Rundown.
The Rundown. You know,
let's run down some stuff we've watched
recently.
Let's
run it down.
Because we watched some stuff together.
Yeah, what did we watch together?
Some stuff that's definitely worth talking about together.
Okay.
One Night in Miami came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it did.
And we finally watched it.
This is Regina King's directorial debut.
Yeah, it is.
What a debut it is. It's a play adaptation, like Ma Rainey. It's about a night in Miami when four men, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, Sam Cooke, and Malcolm X, hang out in a hotel room. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, cool. They're going to be together. It's going to be like a party. They're going to have a good time.
Miami.
And Miami, right? I mean, come on. You're in Miami the night that Muhammad Ali wins the fight.
Yeah.
You go out and party. And it's not that. No, it is a movie about these four men in a hotel room. Like having conversations, like really deep conversations about, you know, being a black man and being a black man in the spotlight with a platform, with a voice, and just like the movement that's happening, you know, civil rights and just like what they all could be doing for that, you know, really good, interesting, conversations happening. And it's a really good, theater piece. I would love to see it on stage.
Yeah, I thought it worked well as a movie, too.
Yeah, I think that they added some really, really, like, good cinematic aspects with, like, bringing in, like, the boxing matches, which I'm sure is not something you do on the stage version, which made it feel more like a movie.
It's hard not to compare it to Ma Rainey because they're both stage adaptations of biopics of these figures of black history.
Yeah.
But I did rewatch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom this week as well because...
lesbians?
Yeah, The Watermelon Woman is a seminal black lesbian movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to watch at least one other black lesbian movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I thought of because I'd been meaning to rewatch it. Still really like it. I mean, awesome. Everyone's so incredible in it. The music, the costumes, the screenplay or the the screenplay based on the
August Wilson play
script. What's it called when it's on the stage?
It's
what's the screenplay called?
Why am I blinging out right now? It's a stage, like you
stage play.
A stage play. You write a script. It's a script.
Yeah.
It's a stage script.
I'm just still not a fan of George C. Wolfe's direction.
Mm-hmm.
But it bothered me in a different way this time.
Okay.
The first time watching it, like the way he leaned into all the elements of theater, like the changing in lighting for a scene when they're in like the same room, but the emotion changes. So everything gets dark and then the spotlight and, but that stuff didn't bother me at all this time. This time, the little bits of like, I'm going to do some movie stuff started bothering me.
Yeah.
I just think it's really at ends with, being a movie or being a film play.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, like all the exterior shots bother me. The CGI of the skyline, I think is poorly done.
Mm-hmm.
But like also give Viola Davis her lead actor Oscar.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. She needs that.
Yeah, she does. She does.
And Chadwick is great, but I don't think he needs anyone to say that he should win, because I'm pretty sure he's going to win.
Yeah.
Not that saying Viola Davis should win is going to have any effect. But if I can put that out there in the universe, I still haven't seen Nomadland. I know Frances McDormand's getting some heat.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Ma.
Ma.
She's Ma.
Viola, she is Ma.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to One Night in Miami that we watched this week, right?
I mean, I watched this one too. So.
Yeah. I was just interested in all those conversations that they were having just about, you know, when Malcolm X was like, his character was like, you are, as a black man, you are a weapon. And then Jim Brown goes, but I don't want to be a weapon. And Malcolm X is like, well, you have to be. And it's just like, it really like that. I remember that really sticking with me, being like, wow, okay. So like, you know, as black people or as any like marginalized group, you kind of have to fight, but also like, you also just want to exist. And like existing is enough. And Malcolm X was just so militant that it had to be his way. But they were all doing their thing for, you know, just our future in their own way, you know. And I think the picture gave a really full picture of that scope, of that lens, of what they were all doing. I really enjoyed it a lot. It had moments where you got to see Malcolm X like really paranoid, and the performances were really good. I mean, the actor playing Muhammad Ali, Something Gore, really good.
Yeah, I think all four of just the like, core cast members.
Yeah, all really good performances.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them get some love, but I don't know. It's a pretty tight race as is, going off those Spirit Award nominations.
I don't think those have any indication on Oscars.
But it could. I mean, a lot of them...
It usually doesn't.
It usually doesn't?
No, the two award shows usually aren't correlated.
Okay. So, like... Okay. So, like, Riz and Steve and all of them might be left out. Okay, got it.
It's usually what happens is the night before the Oscars, they have the Independent Spirit Awards where like the good stuff is highlighted.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the overrated shit is crowned.
Yeah.
The next night. The Oscars. Awards are stupid anyway.
Stupid fun.
Yeah. Guilty pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah.
We watched The Handmaiden.
We did.
We did.
That was...
on the paper list.
Lesbian movie watched.
That was the only lesbian movie I watched besides The Watermelon Woman. And it was a rewatch for me. It was your first time watching it.
Yeah, if it wasn't so long, I would have picked it for this month as like the movie I'd been meaning to see for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Old Boy years ago. It obviously made a huge impression on me. Maybe not enough to watch The Handmaiden until now. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any of the other, like, Old Boy is part of a trilogy?
No, Old Boy is his only film that I've seen. And then I watched Little Drummer Girl, his miniseries, a couple months ago.
Okay, I have to, I want to do a night where we watch Mr. and Mrs. Sympathy and maybe Old Boy, because they're really good.
Sounds like a very long night.
Yeah, it's a three-parter. But they're really good. They're really enjoyable pieces of work. But yeah, thoughts on The Handmaiden?
I mean, fucked up pick for like lesbian week.
Yeah.
Just I mean, it's definitely, there's lesbians.
Yeah, it's just a fucked up tale.
Yeah, and it's like very, like, I'm a guy telling a lesbian story.
I've thought that at first too. And then there were moments where I felt like a lot of like the nudity and like the sex scene was like maybe a little like gratuitous, but also like handled with like modesty.
Oh, I completely disagree.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the main parts of it that were like shouting at me,
mm-hmm.
This is a guy making a movie about lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'd be complaining about it or highlighting it this much because I loved the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that we're talking about it this week with The Watermelon Woman, I feel like there's some pressure on it. But like the sex scenes and just the idea that it's just all these power dynamics and just, I mean, it's a Park Chan-wook movie, so it's going to have like fucked up shit and like people fucking each other over and playing these parts and always emphasis on performance and secrets and family secrecy.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But it's just like...
Yeah.
It's not for the lesbians. It's not like this one's for the lesbians. But also, I'm not a lesbian, so I can't watch it and claim it or disclaim it.
True.
For the lesbians. For me, yeah, that's fucking awesome. That shit was fucked up. And the sex scenes were sexy.
Yeah.
But like...
I really liked the... just like how the story was told and how it unraveled. Because when I first saw it, I was like very confused. And then when it got to the end and it was just like... Oh, it was just like a triple crossing or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of those Tarantino-esque messing around with the chronology of the narrative.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you some fucked up shit movies.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he the way he shoots scenes... And he does some stuff that, there's, like, his toolbox is just, like, has some different tools in it than I'm used to seeing. So, like, the way he'll communicate things is just so different than what I'm used to seeing. And I wish I could think of an example. Well, like, there's this one, and I can't think of the specific moment in the scene, so I can't speak to what it was representing. But, like, he does the fast pan or the fast zoom in
mm-hmm.
that's, like... I don't know. He'll travel like a really long distance in the zoom, but fit pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't remember when in the story that came up.
It's like,
I remember just
there's
like
a scene where the lady of the house is like in the distance. She's like in like the woods mm-hmm. and it's just like a circle where like tree branches aren't in her face is, and it kind of zooms in on that as she's like looking at the two of them together.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does really good stuff, interesting things with like framing characters.
Oh, his framing is so good. There's so many moments in The Handmaiden where it's a painting, where it looks like a painting, where it just holds on it just a little bit longer. So like it's set and there's stillness and it looks like a painting. Mm-hmm. There's so many shots in there that are just so beautiful. And it was just like, he is like, it's a story about, you know, erotic stories and just like erotic pictures and like the way some of the shots are framed. They're just like that, where it looks like that, where it looks like a painting or it looks like the erotic picture that is in those books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The house that the
the mansion.
I mean, it's almost a character of its own in the story. The house, the basement, where one half of it is inspired by Eastern Japanese architecture and the other half of it is inspired by British architecture to show the two worlds and the different cultures. And meanwhile, it's a Korean living there.
Yeah.
And the period aspect to it, definitely very interesting.
Yeah.
And the costuming. I mean, it's masterful.
It's masterful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really long, though. So if you're going to watch it, buckle your seatbelt.
Yeah. I ultimately chose The Watermelon Woman, a 90-minute movie written and directed by a lesbian.
Yes.
Not that we had a slot for lesbians that we were trying to fill.
What else have you watched?
I watched the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror because I think it was like the day after The Handmaiden, and I was like, what's something short and lesbian I can watch? And it's only 60 minutes, and I only watched it the first time that it came out. Mm-hmm. And that's an episode that definitely sticks out as one of the best Black Mirror episodes. Mm-hmm. And it sticks out as like one of the least scary Black Mirror episodes, at least on the surface.
Yeah.
There's some stuff at the end where if you think about it a little bit, it's terrifying, but the episode doesn't put it in your face like, hey, this is terrifying.
Yeah, ultimately it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind a lot of Black Mirror episodes don't end.
Yeah, that it's way. A different it's a different look at technology, but it's also just a really well. I mean, kind of like The Handmaiden in that the story will just reveal bits of information at a time until you know like what you're watching.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun, and I wasn't familiar with Kugou Mbatha Raw when I first saw Black Mirror, San Junipero. So it was fun going back and being like, yeah, look at her. She's great.
Yeah. I was about to say, we just did, not just did, but we did In Color.
Fast Color.
Fast Color.
Yeah, that's when I, learned her name.
Okay.
And, I mean, she's been in a lot of stuff that she's pretty prolific.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Davis too is good in that. Don't usually get to see her playing nebbish characters. I feel like she's the strong-willed woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still mad about Happiest Season. Speaking of lesbians, like if you want to watch a Mackenzie Davis lesbian movie and it's not Christmas, watch San Junipero, not Happiest Season. Okay. Can I squeeze in one more?
Go ahead.
Because the transition works perfectly, because I was just talking about Happiest Season. I watched another Kristen Stewart lesbian movie.
Oh, okay.
Certain Women, directed by Kelly Reichert, from 2016. It's an anthology movie based on a collection of short stories. Three different stories featuring strong-willed women. I went into it, for some reason I thought they were all going to be lesbians, but it was only the third story featured lesbians. But the first one was Laura Dern, and the second one was Michelle Williams. Mm-hmm. So even if they were attracted to men, I was still interested. Mm-hmm. Kelly Reichert's such a... She's like one of those filmmakers where you watch enough of her things and she has such a distinct style. And like in the Laura Dern one, it happens towards the beginning, so it's not a spoiler to say it involves a hostage crisis. But it's not, and this might sound like a complaint, but it's more of an observation. It's not like tense and exciting. Well, it's tense, but it's not, like, gripping.
Okay.
And it's not, like... It's very down to... The way she shoots things is very down to earth and just focused on the person and doesn't try to put you in their head, but rather just show you what's happening around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. And anyway, the third one features Kristen Stewart and Lily Gladstone, an actor that I hadn't seen before. Who's of Blackfeet and Nez Perce heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all white women. That's fun. She blew me away. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kristen, Michelle Williams, and Lauren Dern. But after watching that movie, I was like, oh, Lily Gladstone. Okay.
Has she been in more stuff since?
Yeah, not enough.
Okay.
I mean, maybe she's done TV.
Okay.
Kelly worked with her again in First Cow.
Okay. Cool. Is that everything we watched?
That's all I got to talk about.
Yeah, that's all I got to talk about. Before we hop into the feature, I just want to give a quick RIP, rest in power, to Cloris Leachman and Cicely Tyson, who we lost back to back.
Yeah.
Two phenomenal actors in their field, respectively. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now let's get to the Watermelon Woman.
Hi, I'm Cheryl, and I'm a filmmaker. I'm not really a filmmaker, but I have a videotaping business with my friend Tamara, and I work at a video store, so I'm working on being a filmmaker. The problem is I don't know what I want to make a film on. I know it has to be about black women because our stories have never been told, so I've been renting movies. No, I haven't been renting movies, but I get movies from the video store that I work at, and I've taken all these films out from the 30s and 40s with black actresses in them, like Hattie McDaniel and Louise Beavers. And in these films, in some of the films, the black actresses aren't even listed in the credits. And I was just totally shocked by that. So in this one film that came into the store, Plantation Memories, I saw the most beautiful black mammy named Elsie. Her name, the Watermelon Woman. That's right, Watermelon Woman. Is Watermelon Woman her first name, her last name, or is it her whole name? I don't know, but girlfriend has it going on, and I think I've figured out what my project's going to be on. I'm going to make a movie about her. I'm going to find out what her real name is, who she was and is, everything I can find out about her. Because something in her face, something in the way she looks and moves is serious, is interesting. And I'm going to just tell you all about it.
Is a 1996 American romantic comedy drama written, directed, and edited by Cheryl Dunier. Stars Dunier as Cheryl. She plays a version of herself.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered a landmark in new queer cinema. The first feature film directed by a black lesbian.
Dope. Awesome. History. Black history, y'all.
Was that 96? That's crazy. That took a long time.
It took a long time. But, you know, I guess better late than never.
Yeah. Also, and better late than never for us having seen this because...
True.
I think I first heard about it a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued to come up every time I looked up, like, queer films or black cinema or... Yeah, underrated gems. And finally watched it. And yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Sorry, listeners. 4 weeks of watching movies we hadn't seen before, and we liked all of them.
I think there was a reason why we were interested in seeing these movies. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my first time watching it. I'm glad I watched it. Finally got into it, finally got to understand what the title meant
mm-hmm.
by Watermelon Woman, and just like
all that I have to say on the topic of, you know, black actresses in Hollywood and just, you know, that character that they had to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, the mammy character. Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed it. And to have that through the lens of a lesbian was like an added bonus.
That, yeah.
You know, I won't say didn't. Never mind. I don't know what I'm saying. Let's just go.
Okay. Yeah, let's go. Start with some classical music and then a title card giving our location, which blew me away because I didn't read that much into this movie. Mm. Our first location, Bryn Mawr, PA.
Yeah, it's a Philadelphia movie.
Woo! That's wow. where we are.
That's a surprise.
For all of our listeners that don't know us personally or know where we're recording from.
Yeah, there were so many times in this picture where I heard like street names and then it made me giggle.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I pass that street every day. Oh, that one's right up the street.
I like the text of the title cards. It's very 90s, mm-hmm. Like alternative. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that font's called, but it's like the O's are swirlies. And,
yeah, it's like that island font.
Right? Yeah. I feel like I see it on like...
it's an island font. It's very... Gullah Gullah Island, you know?
Yeah. But then we started at a wedding.
Yeah,
we started at a very familiar images for me because I used to work at weddings. It's a black wedding.
Yeah.
It's a Jewish and a black wedding, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just one.
No, one side of the family was Jewish. So
I thought they just had like black friends that were there. I was not.
No, I don't think.
I did not.
That's a lot of black friends. No, because they, I liked how just the close-ups of these people is just old folks and,
looking around.
Just awkward and, but people being posh because they're at this wedding and the mm-hmm. classical music and mm-hmm. just getting a look at, kind of the establishment, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like what are two lesbians doing at this wedding, the celebration of heterosexuality mm-hmm. and monogamy, heterosexual monogamy. And we've discovered that behind the camera is Cheryl and Tamara.
Yep.
They're videographers.
Yep, videographers of the wedding.
And there's this moment where they're arranging everyone to get a big shot of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And then the still photographer butts in with his tripod right in front of their camera and then starts like rearranging people.
And she's just like, hey, can't you see that we're working here?
Right.
Wait your turn.
Yeah, and it's this funny moment. I didn't make this connection until today when we rewatched it, that it's like, and I love when movies do this, they have this little moment in the beginning that's just like a microcosm of the whole thing you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the white man behind a camera just taking over.
Mm-hmm. Taking over
black,
a shot.
Black women making art.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get their cash.
Yeah, their pay, their tip, or whatever.
Tamara's happy. Cheryl would have preferred a check.
Mm-hmm. And then Tamara's not happy because her pay is $50 short.
Yeah.
And she wants her damn money.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl's just like, hey, we gotta make sacrifice for art.
Right.
But it ain't Tamara's art, so mm-hmm. she wants her money. She wants to take her girlfriend Stacy out on a date, and she needs that $50.
Yeah, but Cheryl wants to borrow the equipment for the weekend mm-hmm. To work on her passion project.
Mm-hmm. Which I guess Tamara hasn't seen any of it, because she says, you know, this is the third week you asked for my stuff, and you haven't shot anything.
Mm-hmm. Then we get a drive home montage, and home is they're driving into the city.
Yeah, so we see the bridge.
Yeah.
Some buildings.
Like the music is like this jazz music that mm-hmm. then like after like 20 or 30 seconds gets sampled into a hip hop beat. You know, like that progression mm-hmm. being like you know how hip hop works. You start with something old and then you make it new.
Yeah. You sample.
And it's history.
Yes. And so while we are seeing like shots of Philadelphia, Tamara and Cheryl are
the first time.
Tamara.
Okay.
Tamara.
Because there's one point where the guy calls mispronounces her name.
So is it Tamara or is it Tamara?
Tamara.
Okay. So Cheryl and Tamara are having this
Tamara.
Tamara.
Mm.
See, because it's the spelling. I think it's Tamara.
Okay.
I think it's Tamara.
Tamara.
Is
that what you said? Tamara. Okay, yeah.
Tamara is asking her, like, what are you shooting anyway? Like, what is this thing you're working on? But Cheryl doesn't give her a straight answer. She's just like, it's going to be this new thing. It's going to be art. It's going to be urban. It's going to be the Watermelon Woman. And that's the first time we hear the mm-hmm. term the Watermelon Woman in it. Leonardo meme pointing at the screen. Ha.
Oh, because they say the title.
Because they say the title.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think everyone knows what you mean by
that.
No. That was like a tweet you posted one time,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. It's a Twitter thing.
Follow us at Movie Film Pod on Twitter.
There we go.
So now we get Talking Head, because this is like a mockumentary. Mm-hmm. Cheryl's going to sit down in front of the camera, get her little microphone attached to her shirt, mm-hmm. and address the audience directly.
Mm-hmm.
She introduces herself, and she can't quite call herself a filmmaker.
Yeah.
It's this moment that. Where she like says, yeah, I'm actually not a filmmaker. I'm trying to be, but I haven't made anything.
Yeah.
I don't know what my movie's going to be. I just know it's going to be about black women because our stories have never been told.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she brings us, she tells us about her interest in old Hollywood movies featuring black actresses.
Yeah, 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm. How she, her favorite of them is this movie called Plantation Memories.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is this really beautiful woman who is playing the mammy character. And she shows us this character. And just like a bit of her scene.
Yeah,
she's just like, yeah, she's got it going on. I'm really interested in who she was because in the credits, she's credited as the Watermelon Woman. And she's just like, what does that mean? Like, is Watermelon her first name? Is it her last
name?
Right.
Like,
how does it work? Who is she? She really wants to figure out who this woman is.
Yeah, she notes that with all those old films, the black actresses usually are not credited.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to dig into this history.
Mm-hmm.
The scene of Plantation Memories that we get is of the Watermelon Woman attending to her master's every whim. I think like the master's husband left,
yeah.
and it's just reassuring her master that her husband loves her and he'll come back.
Yeah,
and
like
everything's,
I prayed,
your life is gonna be fine.
Yeah, I prayed for it, and he's gonna come back. It's just the sky is blue, you know.
Yeah. So now we get another title screen. Well, now we get the title screen,
mm-hmm.
Watermelon Woman with that fun font. And mm-hmm. The screen's like cut diagonally, one half bright pink, the other half bright green.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got that fun 90s vibe to it.
Yeah.
I didn't even mention the 4:3 aspect ratio. I feel like we praise things like The Lighthouse and I'm thinking of ending things when they do that aspect ratio, but come on.
It's here. It is.
So now we're gonna see what work looks like. Mm-hmm. Not the videography, the video store. And for our young listeners, a video store is like a Netflix you can go to.
Yeah. It's like
you have
a
to like
library.
Plan out what you're gonna watch like before the moment you hit play.
True.
You have to actually think about the stuff you're gonna watch. Pay for each individual thing.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, it's got that Clerks vibe, which is an independent movie featuring people working in a video store.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have minded if I grew up watching this instead of Clerks. But I'm glad I have it now.
Yeah, we have it now.
damn it, what, Tamara.
Tamara.
Yeah, Tamara's trying to set up Cheryl with her friend Stacy's friend Yvette.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl's not really interested, but they're still going to go on a double date to karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
Which opens with a awkward white guy singing Boogie Oogie Oogie.
I actually think it's an awkward white woman.
Oh, is it a lesbian place?
I think it's lesbians. Okay. Yeah, and she's just very butch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's singing Boogie Oogie Oogie very off key.
Yeah, but it's not the worst vocal performance we'll hear that night.
No.
Because after that concludes, Yvette gets excited for her turn to sing.
I love it. She's like, tell them I'm a singer.
Yes.
I'm a singer. Like, the way, like, she is just, like, so, like, overly confident.
She's gonna...
And wants them to know, like, I auditioned for Spike Lee. Yeah. I was almost in a Spike Lee movie. Let them know. And so she goes up on stage to request a song. And, of course, it's Loving You.
Mm-hmm.
Which she dedicates to her girls.
How would you describe her singing?
It's like a baby. It's like very baby whispery.
Is that what she's doing? Yeah, it's definitely whisper. It's like she's like singing through a layer of styrofoam.
Loving you. And it's very like cutesy, like, ooh, you know?
Yeah, when she gets to like the doo-doo-doos.
Like, tiny. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like she's doing like a Betty Boop thing almost. Mm. Yeah.
Needless to say, Cheryl is not interested.
No.
And it's revealed while she's singing, like, Stacy talks about her experiences in college. Like, that time she auditioned for that Spike Lee movie.
Someone laughed at her?
Which was school days, by the way. They don't say it, but it's definitely school days. Visiting colleges.
Yeah.
I'm a Spike Lee fan now, so I can pick up on these types of things.
Confidently say that. I mean, I think the story is she went to go sing and then someone laughed at her or threw a drink in her face or something.
And she snapped.
And she snapped and she put that man in the hospital. And it was like the start of her emotional period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tamara says she's real cute, Cheryl, but Cheryl wants to date people that are...
mentally strong.
Yeah, mentally healthy.
Yes.
So now Cheryl's going to be walking around the street interviewing folks.
Around Center City.
Yeah, asking about the watermelon woman.
Mm-hmm.
A couple answers we get. The first one, pretty incisive. So someone said, yeah, she's originated the Aunt Jemima character.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Other person says,
by the name, I think that she's from like old Hollywood movies.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which I would think if someone came up to me and asked, have you heard of the Watermelon Woman? I mean, now I would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie. It's fictional. Did you know if it was fictional while we were watching it yesterday?
In my gut, I was just like, this is fake.
Yeah, I wasn't.
But then I was also just like, what if it's real? Through the whole thing, I was like, no, this is fake. This is fake. They just have way too much. It's just way too convenient for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just got that Blair Witch Project energy going to it where it blurs this line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even more so because Cheryl's real, playing herself. Her mom's in it as herself.
Mm-hmm. I love her mom.
But these black actresses did exist, whereas the Blair Witch, I'm hoping, did not.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't want to say
anything.
Fingers
crossed.
I don't want to say anything definitive, lest the next time I'm in the woods, my tongue gets chopped off and I get put in timeout.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
That's it.
But I don't, yeah, just like that tension between, because I wasn't certain that it was fake.
Uh-huh.
I suspected it, but that was fun watching it and having that. Anyway, another person, or now she's asked, someone says, I think she's from Philly.
She's from Philly, right?
Yeah, and then she asks a group of men on the parkway right outside the art museum. Mm-hmm. It's my city. And one says, oh, she's the lady that wore fruit on her head, right? And then another guy says, no, that's Rosie Perez.
And he's just like, no, that's not Rosie Perez. This lady like, was like in the in the 40s and 50s. And then he goes, well, Rosie looks like she's from the 40s and 50s.
And then the next title card is parentheses, sorry, Rosie.
Sorry, Rosie. Sorry. They're so shady.
Yeah, and then we go to Winfield, her mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, so says the voiceover, is a collector of sorts. Mm-hmm. I'd say she's a collector of junk. And the camera's like in the corner of the room, like... I know you don't usually like those slanted shots. Yeah. What did you think about this one to show like the clutter of the basement?
It didn't bother me only because the clunkiness is like part of it, you know, because it is like her making right. a document, like a documentary, and just like having a camera and it being shaky and her placing it down mm-hmm. anywhere to get the shot. Yeah, it didn't bother me in that aspect.
Me neither. Then we get an interview with her mother.
Yeah.
Her real mother.
Her mother, sweet lady, said she knew who the watermelon was.
The water who? The
what? Yeah, but then when she gets in front of the camera, she's just like, what? Who? No, I don't know what you're talking about. And she says something to her mom, and her mom just sweetly says, I'm your mother. You don't talk to me like that. And
she was like, Mom, I came all this way to talk to you about them.
Yeah. She's like, okay, I'm sorry. But I came all this way to talk to you.
Then she sees the picture.
Yeah.
And that gets her memories going. But she still doesn't know the watermelon woman. She just knows her, not from the movies, from the clubs, mm-hmm. as a singer.
Mm-hmm.
From the Blue Note, the Showboat, Peps.
Yep. And that sends her on a new journey. Now she has new information. She has a little bit more information that she was a singer
mm-hmm.
Around Philly.
There's more to her than the mammy roles.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's going to be back at work at the store. And this is where we meet Diana, the love interest.
Mm-hmm. And Cheryl is helping her find a movie that goes with Cleopatra Jones.
Yeah, she recommends Aliens,
Carrie,
Repulsion.
Yes. And, you know, it's just a little conversation, you know. She's not interested in Carrie because...
she hates Sissy Spacek.
Yeah, she hates
Sissy. She says Sissy Spacek's weird.
And pale and anorexic.
You know? Yeah.
And so she ends up with Repulsion and mm-hmm. Cleopatra Jones.
Yep.
It's two for one, too, so whatever you want.
Netflix is all of them for mm-hmm. something a month. The price keeps going up.
Tamara and Cheryl are chatting. I didn't really, like, write down what each of their conversation was, but I just noticed that.
Tamara clocked Diana as a lesbian,
mm-hmm.
and Cheryl just, like, wasn't. Paying attention to that.
Yeah, she's like, why are you always clocking women?
And I was like, we're lesbians.
We're lesbians. Yeah. That's what we do.
and there's a new girl at work that Bob, their boss, is going to introduce to them.
Mm-hmm.
Bryn Mawr grad, Annie.
Yeah.
Bob says, like, Annie Hinckley, and then Annie corrects him, says Annie Heath.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
she's Annie a Heath. Recent college graduate trying to be a new person.
Yeah.
She's got a skinny, tall, skinny white girl with a dog collar and pink hair,
mm-hmm.
Bare midriff.
Mm-hmm. She looks like she's like
trying.
She looks like all the kids on TikTok.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's how they. Yo, it's so funny. I was watching this and I was just like, yo, people still dress exactly like this.
Well, it's like a couple years ago. I feel like we were all doing 80s stuff. Maybe 90s are coming back.
I think, yeah. 90s are...
The 90s sucked, though. I mean, I know I'm praising this 90s style and everything, mm-hmm. but, like... As a decade. Yeah, real shitty decade.
There's a lot of good. There's always bad. There's always shitty stuff yeah. in every decade, so... You know. You take what you get.
we get this really cute rom-com-y moment where Diana needs to be rung up with her movies and Bob instructs Cheryl to walk Annie through with the new hire.
Mm-hmm.
So that causes her to slow down the whole checking out process.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this like R&B music playing, which really sets the mood.
Yeah.
And like Annie's like, you know, I worked in a video store before. Don't you just scan them and hand her the movies?
Yeah.
But Cheryl's like trying to make the moment last.
And yeah, it's a slow process.
Get her name and number.
Her address. She gets all her information right then and there.
Forgets to give her back the credit card.
Yeah. It's a little cute. They trade eyes a little bit.
Mm.
I think it's more so the music that's setting the vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's, speaking of 90s, a little dancing interstitial where Cheryl's in front of the skyline.
Yeah, a little candid moment.
Yeah, it reminds me of like That 70s Show or like Fresh Prince did that sometimes where he was in the chair spinning upside down.
That was the intro.
No, but sometimes they cut to that.
Yeah? I
don't think so. At least in like the first few seasons and like he'd be spray painting and then the cop would come up.
That's the intro.
No, but they would cut back to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I need to watch those first seasons again. I wasn't the biggest Fresh Prince fan, so.
You know, but and other shows did that too, where you have the characters like randomly dancing in between scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
It's fun.
And then Cheryl pulls Tamara into the frame. They do this awkward handshake,
mm-hmm.
Like trying to make up like a cool handshake. But mm-hmm. then they end up just doing like real shaking hands into dancing. They're friends. It's fun.
Friends.
And now we're going to Germantown.
Mm-hmm. Tamara's mom gave Cheryl a lead. I forget the man's name.
Lee Edwards.
But he has a pretty good archive on old black films
mm-hmm.
from the 20s and 30s. And it's when they get to his place, his house is decorated with it, like posters and signs and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he tells them all about what Philly was like in the 20s and 30s. In terms of black culture.
And how, it was moving and shaking out there.
Yeah.
Much different than it is.
Everyone was out on South today. Street, and Cheryl's like, oh, like now. And he says, no, South Street sucks now.
It sucks now.
And I was thinking, well, you should see it 30 years later. 20-something years later.
25?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's math.
That's math.
He explains, pretty much spells out why that black women were kind of forced into these roles of the mammy, just being domestic servants, and that they were making back then a lot of black films, black filmmakers and all black casts, and they would show them before the white movies.
Yeah.
But then they stopped making them.
Yeah, they weren't doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Because black audiences wanted to see big pictures and they wanted to see the glamour and you know, they wanted to see that, and the black casted movies didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then all the work for black actors were in the white movies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have this scene, or I guess there's this moment where Cheryl's asking about
a woman, she's acting about Watermelon Martha.
Woman and the director of Plantation Memories, Martha Page.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee says, I don't know a lot about women. And Tamara behind the camera is like, yeah, obviously, look at you.
Look at you.
Because, he's coded gay.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's not even coded. It's his, you get a voiceover,
you get a voiceover introducing him. Story. Yeah.
Yeah, that he's a gay man.
He's a gay man. And I guess he's just a tad bit messy. And if there was a woman in his life, it would be a little neater.
I didn't even make that connection.
Oh.
I don't think the movie was either saying.
Oh. Maybe that's what I saw.
No, I think she was just saying, look at you. You're clearly a gay man. You don't know a lot about women.
Oh, okay.
And Cheryl's kind of upset with Tamara for being rude.
Mm-hmm.
because Lee's a little offended. So now we cut to Charles lip-syncing the plantation memory scene.
Yeah.
Lip-syncing Watermelon Woman's part.
With the headscarf on. Yeah, it's, kind of like what the poster looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then we have the scene at the produce truck. Gonna run into Diana again, but mm-hmm. she's with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she's taking a long time to order.
Yeah.
And there's a woman in line, like, complaining.
Yeah.
Like, what's she buying anyway?
What's she buying anyway? Yeah. It's really funny. And so, yeah, she doesn't really have time for Cheryl. Because her friend is just like, hey, we gotta beat it.
Mm-hmm.
So she just pieces out on her. And that's the end of that.
Yeah, back to the project. Mm-hmm. They're in the library, deep in the stacks. We talked about this with the Handmaiden, just film composition, framing people with against like objects in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
The stacks in the library offer good opportunity for that with the shelves on either side
mm-hmm.
of Cheryl. And then Tamara on the aisle next to her, then popping her head through. It's cute.
Yeah, in a way, like...
You get that little box. Lit. And it's, like, on beat with the jazzy score that's uh-huh. playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool lighting.
Yeah, just in her eyes, she gets that Morticia Adam lighting.
Yeah. Tamara doesn't have the most patience for this project.
Nope.
Not very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Says, why don't we just go to the info desk and ask? And Cheryl says, they're not going to help. But then they go... And ask.
It doesn't help.
It doesn't help. The guy's just saying, that sounds like reference. Check the reference section.
Yeah.
And I just love the touch that he has, like, a runny nose and a handkerchief.
Yeah.
It's like, you just don't want to be around this guy any longer.
Yeah. He's got nothing to do. I'm sure he doesn't want to be there either.
Right.
And he's just
Yeah, because after they leave, you see the big line behind him. And he's like, all right, who's next?
I wanted to see a little bit of, like, interaction between him and the guy that was behind them. Because he comes up in this white shirt with a little bit of his belly poking mm-hmm. out. And he has, like, that, like, broken wrist. And I just wanted to see a little bit of that conversation.
Mm.
Broken wrist. What? It's not a broken...
A limp?
Limp wrist. There we go.
But, yeah, that scene's just kind of showing that the library, the collection of history, doesn't really include black lesbian artists.
Yeah.
And if it does, it's only like in the footnotes of the white directors, or in this case, Martha Page, the white woman director, which is also a foot, like female directors being a footnote.
Yeah, she's a footnote. And then...
A little footnote.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have her own name.
Yeah.
Which we now know is Faye.
Mm-hmm.
But Cheryl is able to get some pictures. Because we get, look at a slideshow, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's not really slides. She has the camera set up in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
And she's showing off the photographs. And I just like... the way it's shot with her eye, like, peeking, like, popping out of the corner. Mm-hmm. So you get to see, like, one eye, like, reacting to all these pictures.
Yeah. A lot of pictures of old black actresses. Mostly a lot of pictures of Hattie McDaniel.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, title card, South Philly.
Yeah, we meet Shirley. South Philly, that's where we are.
That's where we are. Yeah, we meet Miss Shirley.
Cheryl's a lesbian. Cheryl's mother's lesbian friend.
She's in the family.
Yes, as she says.
I think she's in the family.
This is where we learn that the Watermelon Woman's name was Faye Richards.
Yes.
And she was also in the family.
Mm-hmm.
As was Martha Page.
Mm-hmm.
The white woman director of Plantation Memories.
Yeah.
Cheryl used to go to the clubs all the time to... hear Faye Richards sing. She says she used to sing in the clubs for all us stone butches.
Mm-hmm. And we would fight over her, pretty mm-hmm. much. Yeah.
And she collected, Cheryl asks if she has any photos, and it's cute. Cheryl kind of like lights up. She's like, oh, I used to save everything.
Yeah.
I've got it all.
And she does have like a really good picture of her.
Yeah. Now we're going to go back to the video store.
Mm-hmm.
There was a brief mention earlier that I think Tamara was like, what are you asking Cheryl why she's watching all these old Hollywood movies? She says, why are you watching all these old black movies, even the new black movies I can't stand?
Mm-hmm.
And Tamara was like, Cheryl's like, it's better than what you watch, black porn.
Yeah.
So now we have this moment in the video store where Bob is going to figure out that Cheryl and Tamara were ordering tapes under customers' names.
Yeah, what's the title of the movie?
In this case, it is Bald Black Ballbusters. He got a call that it's not available, but Big Black Bob is.
Yeah, it's they ordered it under Diana's name, who just happens to be right on time. Returning her last two purchases.
Yeah, and Bob is gonna take care of it. He's like he's not behind the desk. He was like stocking stuff, but then he like turns around and sees Diana, and he like rubs his mustache a little bit to like get it in order.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross. And
as a man with a mustache, I have to say, sometimes you just gotta. You know, part of the mustache.
No, but like the way, you know, he's a guy working and now he's going
to talk to this woman,
like get his mustache in order to try to pick up women.
Big Bob is available.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the line.
And then he gets a call comes and Tamara picks up and then she's like, Bob, it's a woman who says she's your girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, Cheryl ends up being the one that helps Diana out.
Yeah.
Which leads to her getting an invite to her house.
Yep. She's like, hey, if you want these movies that I paid for, that you ordered under my name, you're going to have to come to my place and get them.
And her place is this giant loft.
This giant empty loft. And
she lives all alone.
Mm-hmm. She just moved. She just moved there.
Yeah.
So she's still setting up shop. And so they watch one of the old movies.
Yeah, I think it's Plantation Memories. She stays for dinner. They watch the tapes, talk about the project. Plantation Memories is on, and comes out in the open that they're both attracted to each other. Mm-hmm. So they start kissing.
Yeah.
And while like they transition into a sex scene, the camera focuses on the screen playing the movie, and it's a scene where the master's saying, "God made me this color, and he did it for a reason." And then the watermelon woman slaps her.
It's two black women, too. Faye is darker skin, the other woman's lighter skin. So it's not Plantation Memories.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought it was a follow-up to the scene we saw earlier where the woman's husband left and now she's talking about how she's going to be poor now.
No. No, it's different. It's a different movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it gets into colorism. Interesting.
Yeah, because it's I believe it's one of the movies that Faye did. Well, because we're going to get there when she, with Liberty Motion Pictures, like afterwards. Yeah, I think it's one of those.
I guess that would make sense because the context of her slapping another character wouldn't fit in with the Mamie character type.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Interesting.
But sex.
Yeah, Cheryl and Diana fuck.
Yeah. And it's a pretty long sex scene.
Yeah, filmed mostly with close-ups of bodies.
Body parts,
mm-hmm.
tongues, smiles.
No lingering long shots of scissoring, like The Handmaiden.
I mean, the Handmaiden had scissoring. I mean, but this has some pretty graphic titty licking.
Yeah, the Handmaiden had titty licking also.
Not as graphic as the watermelon woman. What am I saying? I'm just saying they're both graphic.
But the Handmaiden definitely more so.
Well, the Handmaiden more so because that's the topic of the picture.
Yeah, there's reasons, but yeah. I'm just pointing. I was just saying. I guess I didn't need to bring it up again.
So yeah, they have sex, and Cheryl's just like, you know, I don't usually do this. I don't sleep with people in the first date. Mm-hmm. It's not, that's not my gig. But, you know, she was just really vibing with her, and so yeah. It happened.
Yeah, then we see some old newsreel footage from Liberty Pictures of Faye Richardson traveling to attend a NAACP meeting, mm-hmm. and on her way to meet with the filmmaker about an all-black gangster movie she's going to star in.
Yeah.
And then a new title location card, we're going to Swarthmore, and we're going to meet cultural critic Camille Paglia.
Paglia.
Who also plays herself.
Mm-hmm.
But a comedic version of herself.
Yeah.
She's representing the film critic establishment, talking about the mammy archetype.
Yeah.
And she's clueless.
Very clueless. Very, she's like, ignorant. Self-involved.
Yeah. Somehow makes it like blackness all about Italians.
Yeah, makes it about Italian. Her and her experience. And she doesn't understand why the image of like a black boy smiling over a watermelon has a negative connotation to it.
Yeah, she's biased because watermelon is the same colors as the Italian biased. Flag. So,
yeah.
You know, to be associated with that, she thinks would be great. She remembers at Italian weddings, the men bring out watermelon, and it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also the mammy character of the mammy in the kitchen, that's been misinterpreted.
By the African-American
community.
Yeah.
I remember my Italian grandmother, she was always in the kitchen, and she was so happy.
Yeah.
She loved being in the kitchen. mammies are actually goddess figures.
Yeah.
Of abundance.
So, and I'm glad she let her say all that. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then moved on from
there. She also, Cheryl brings up Martha Page and Faye Richardson's alleged relationship. And Camille completely denies that.
She says, what? That's crazy.
Yeah, there's no... I've never heard that Martha Page was lesbian or bisexual, and also interracial relationships back then. That doesn't make it in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Even like, after the war, I mean, then she says, guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah.
That shows that it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, she's pointing to that movie as historical proof of what reality actually was.
Yeah.
And even though that's pictures. The distorted white history.
Yeah. And then we get pictures of actual, like, interracial lesbian couples in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yeah, just that moment sticks out to me because, I mean, especially after seeing the whole movie and confirming that it is indeed fabricated, this whole watermelon woman mm-hmm. Character history. It's just kind of highlighting that mainstream film history is also pretty much made up as well. Mm-hmm. You take a little bit of truth and they run with it.
Yeah.
But that's widely accepted mm-hmm. as truth.
Yeah.
So now we have a double date with Tamara, Stacy, Cheryl, and Diana. And Diana does not fit in.
Nope. And they're just like testing her out. Tamara's just like, I don't think Stacy likes Diana because I walked in there and they were quiet.
Yeah.
So she comes back with a smoke. Is it a cigarette or is it a joint?
It's a joint.
It's a joint? Okay. So yeah, Tamara
They eat it right before dinner.
Okay, yeah.
Tamara they smoke it right before dinner.
And it's just like, cool, I'm going to smoke. And then Diana's like, ooh, great, pass that.
She grabs it. And then she like turns her back a little bit.
Yeah.
Like she's having her own moment.
They're just looking at her like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the scene cuts before she passes it to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation at dinner becomes about Diana's upbringing. She's
an army brat, right?
Yeah. And she talks about how she moved everywhere and... She actually was born in Jamaica. She loves telling people where she was born.
Because she probably just likes to see the surprise on people's face of them being like, oh, you were born in Jamaica?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is what she got out of Tamara.
Yeah. We learned that Stacy is going to Wharton, the business school at Penn.
Mm-hmm.
And, Diana's dad went there too.
Yep.
So they have things in common.
Mm-hmm.
But Diana brings up, actually pretty helpful for Cheryl's project, she was able to contact Martha Page's sister.
Yeah. And Stacy has like this really funny line of just like, it's usually 6 degrees of separation, but yeah, with her hair, it's only 2. But she says it in such like a slightly shady way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny.
It's funny, and also, like, if you don't have that, then maybe the viewer would be like, this is convenient.
Yeah.
But then you have a character, like, resenting the fact that it's convenient. Like,
yeah.
Because fuck this person for being helpful.
So
we don't like you.
Helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Stacy and Tamara bond over wondering why Charlotte always falls for the white devil types.
Yeah, she says she doesn't skinny always white devils. Date white girls, but when she does, they're always just so ugh.
Always, they're so ugly.
Ugly,
think.
Yeah. Okay.
So now we have another talking head section to really get Cheryl emphasizing this strife between her and Tamara.
Mm-hmm. And they are not clicking as of lately. Ever since, I want to say, she started doing this Watermelon Woman project, they just haven't been on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
That usually happens when you start doing different things. You start going into like different ventures and your friend isn't the most supportive person,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what we're seeing. Tamara isn't being super supportive of her friend and both her project and her relationship. She's mm-hmm. just kind of like butting heads with her constantly.
Yeah. And at work, not being a great teammate. Our next scene is at the Sista Sound Women's Collective,
mm-hmm.
where they're doing some videography work. Mm-hmm. And I guess that business is somehow run through the video store, or maybe they just took Annie under their wing into this venture too.
Yeah.
Because it's the three women now
mm-hmm.
Filming a performance.
Yeah, but not really filming the performance, because Tamara is like oogling like the women in the audience, and just like, look at these fine sisters.
Yeah, that made me laugh, because in like performance movies, like stand-up comedy specials or concerts, I hate those insert shots of audience members.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it so much. Because when you're in the theater, uh-huh. you don't look around at, like, who are these other people watching this? You're watching the thing.
Yeah, you're watching the thing.
And especially with stand-up, I'm just, like, very aware that that's just an easy way to edit between different performances.
Yeah.
Because they shoot more than one show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's not someone jumping to a different side of the stage all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's kind of lazy and... I don't like looking at people, because I wouldn't want people to see me.
So would you want it to just be on the comic the whole time?
Yeah, or sometimes, whose is it? Gerard Carmichael has a special where it doesn't show any of the people. It'll sometimes just show like the architecture of the building that he's in, like, or like focus on the lights for like a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. That okay. works better. So I mean the tape for this performance is just going to be audience members, because Annie is also shooting audience members.
She's also
members,
doing the same thing.
And Cheryl's yelling at Tamara, and Tamara is yelling at Annie for doing the same
the
thing.
The same
but
thing.
But Cheryl's like, Annie, you're doing great.
You're doing great, yeah. And so.
So conflict.
Yeah. So much conflict. So. You know, now that they're on, like, a back porch somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe at, like, the venue they were just at. And...
Or one of their places.
Yeah, maybe.
Like just
but Annie is there as well. Oh no, no, Annie's not there. Diana pops up.
Pops up later. Yeah, yeah. They're sharing a 40,
smoking a joint, and just having and complaining. Complaining about how Tamara can't get down with Annie. She just thinks she's weird with her dog collar and her hair and the way she dresses.
Yeah,
and thinks they she makes them look like some diverse hip hop trio or something, and she's just like, no, yeah. I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah, there aren't many lesbian movies where there's like two lesbian characters that don't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Like you don't see that. That's obviously a thing in life.
Yeah,
people don't all get along with each other just because they have the same sexual preferences.
Yeah,
as we know. Damn, the world would be a better place if that were true, though. If straight people could just get along.
Because they were straight?
Yeah. If that's all straight people needed, it's just like, oh, cool, we're all straight. Actually, maybe we wouldn't want that, because...
Then they would...
Then yeah. they'd get organized. Then
they'd get organized!
But yeah, I don't know, just when you have a movie and... full of lesbian characters, you can show some differences.
Yeah, you can show the whole kaleidoscope.
So then Tamara complaining about Annie kind of leads into her also complaining about Diana.
Mm-hmm. Complaining about Diana, complaining about Stacy too, her girlfriend.
That's true. She's frustrated because the relationship isn't moving.
Yeah, they're not having sex. She doesn't have a key to her place yet. And Cheryl's like, don't you think that maybe she's just, you know, working a lot?
She's going in school. She's working.
She's just...
It's not all about you. Yeah, she might not have time.
And yeah, just
what
be
do you,
there
She
for
says,
her.
What do you expect? And then Tamara says, I expect a little nookie.
And yeah, that leads them into talking about Diana and how, why are you dating this white girl that wants to be... black.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time you hear that. And that also, she's just like, do you want to be white? Like, you're a black girl that wants to be white.
Yeah.
It was just like, Cheryl's just like, well, goddamn, I am black, and like, mm-hmm. who I date, it's nobody's concern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that's true. Yo, this whole movie is just like, there isn't one conversation between them that isn't like a game of tug of war.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now in the back room of the video store, Annie and Tamara are actually it's mostly Tamara being kind of bullying Annie pretty much.
Yeah.
But Annie's being very helpful to Cheryl. She goes to New York on the weekends and happened to check out the lesbian archive and is offering to take Cheryl next week.
Yeah, she found that they had like a really good black lesbian section.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really helpful. And she also stands up to Tamara
mm-hmm.
in that moment as well. And Tamara's just like, ooh, did I hurt your feelings?
Yeah.
But that moment's cut by... Big Bob walking into the room and it's just like, hey, what's going on? Get back to work, get on the floor. And then Cheryl takes this as an opportunity to be like, hey, Tamara's going to cover for me for this day. Right. And then,
even though they didn't have that conversation.
And then Tamara's like, okay, you want to play that game? Okay, well, she's going to cover me on this day and the next day.
Yeah, right.
And so that's just it. She just got to do it. She got to take that now.
And then Bob asks Annie if she learned the Bob system yet.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, I've worked here for months. Mm. And it's an interesting way of showing that time has passed.
Yeah.
Because up until then, there wasn't really much of an indication.
Mm-hmm.
But then the juxtaposition, like, it's interesting they just talked about the Bob system. And we saw the video store, how organized it was. Everything had a section. They knew where all the tapes were.
Mm-hmm.
And then you juxtapose that to the next scene at the... Center for Lesbian Information and Technology, or CLIT, the archive that Annie takes Cheryl to. We hear from the person who works there, or volunteers there, that they're very disorganized. They get all these materials, but right now they're all just in boxes. They're waiting for resources and someone to come in with a system so that they can actually organize it and present them.
Mm-hmm. And when she presents Cheryl with things that she asks for, they're in boxes, so she kind of just dumps it out on the table. Yeah. And Cheryl's just like, whoa, this is way too much mess for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when she's like, hey, you got anything on black lesbians? And she goes to get the box and bring it back. She goes to dump it on the table, but Cheryl grabs it from her and is like, hey, I got it. I'll just look through it. And she's able to actually find, with ease, Faye. She finds her. It's like the first picture there is Faye. And she's like, hey, get this on camera.
Yeah, but then the person working there doesn't want them on camera. They hold, like, meetings once every 2 months. She'll talk to the committee to see if they'll let her film. Mm-hmm. But it manages to steal some shots with the help of Annie, who's now behind the camera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to Rittenhouse Square, not the park, the ritzy neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
where Martha Page's sister lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Cheryl and Diana visiting. And Diana's very polite, and so when Cheryl denies, or when Martha's sister denies that Martha was a lesbian, Diana says, okay, yeah, but Cheryl pushes.
Yeah, she pushes back.
Because she has the research, heard the stories.
And, like, have you seen pictures of your sister?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it very much upsets the sister, who then kicks them out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she also has a black maid.
Yeah, we do see at the very end that she's got some help.
Yeah. Hops in and she, like, checks in on her, like, is everything okay?
When we watched her last night, I thought, because I didn't quite know where it was going, I thought maybe that might have been Faye.
Faye? Oh.
Yeah.
No.
I thought maybe it was going to be like a twist,
mm-hmm.
but no.
When I first saw it, I was just like, oh, well, one, of course she has help, but also like, oh, there's a Mammy character. And then I instantly got mad at myself for thinking of her as a Mammy character mm-hmm. and just not as a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, shit, okay. Let's just work through that.
Yeah. Diana and Cheryl are going to be in bed now. Diana is singing to Cheryl because Cheryl likes her voice, but she only knows white songs.
Mm-hmm.
they don't know the same songs. I forget which one Diana starts singing, and she's like, wasn't that at your prom? Cheryl says, you're forgetting that I'm black.
Yeah.
I
forget what she says their song was.
And then Diana mentions, I don't even remember how it comes up, but she's like, I had two black boyfriends in high school.
I had three black
boyfriends. And then she corrects herself. Actually, three. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then I didn't even get the whole relationship because it's so convoluted. But, like, her father's sisters, someone, something was an ex-Black Panther.
Yeah.
Tyrone Washington.
Washington.
She, like, gets the name and she, like, as if this conversation means anything.
Yeah. And that makes Cheryl giggle and go, you're a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And Diana's just like, what? What does that mean? And Cheryl really doesn't want to get into it about what that means.
Yeah, and that's a wrap on Diana.
Yeah, that's a wrap on Diana. That's
the last scene that she gets. And I think it's really interesting that they don't draw out the conflict of this relationship that, I don't know, it's pretty subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in 1996, that, like, the main conflict in their relationship is just shown through microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
And the falling out isn't this huge production. It's just, like, we see these differences that they have that they might not be able to overcome, or some character flaws or blind spots that Diana has.
And Tamara kind of saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Not gonna lie. She called it. She said when they were on that back patio that Stacy thinks she's into chocolate.
Right.
So, yeah.
I was just, for them to just end that arc right there is really interesting. Mm-hmm. There's some other stuff, too, that ends in interesting ways. I was worried that, like, that it would go to some place where, like, Diana ends up taking credit for Cheryl's documentary or something.
Mm.
I was just worried I don't know. My mind, when you watch things, you assume like the worst thing's going to happen because it's a movie. Everything's exaggerated and heightened.
Yeah.
But this, I guess that adds to the real feeling of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like life.
Yeah.
Cheryl's checking out, what is it, outside the Standard? Or
yeah.
So the old theater.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a camera because she wants to film, and it's this abandoned building that I've actually looked up has been since demolished.
Mm-hmm.
And some PPD officers approach.
Yeah.
Call Cheryl boy and crackhead.
Yeah.
And say she's got stolen property, referring to her camera.
Yeah. And it fades to black.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a call, and my stomach dropped. I was just like, where? Oh, no. Like, she has to make a phone call from the station to, like, Diana. Yeah. Like, hey, help! Can you help me get out of the police?
Mm.
But it wasn't that at all. They actually just moved on from that situation.
Yeah, it's June Walker on the phone. And the way this phone call is filmed, it's, like, a couple shots and then, like, fade to blacks. Like, it'll be like a shot of her finger fiddling with this cord of the telephone, and then fade to black, and then it comes back, and it's the phone being held against her cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see like her lips fade to black, and then she talks to June Walker and introduces herself as Cheryl, a filmmaker.
Yeah.
So, character progression. Yep. There you have it. And we learned that June Walker was Faye's partner for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And she agrees to meet with her on the...
condition?
Condition. There we go. On the condition that she brings her some lunch. Some collard greens made with smoked turkey wings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And... yeah, so Cheryl cooks,
mm-hmm.
gets the food, goes to June's house, but we learn that she was taken to the hospital.
Yeah, from her neighbor.
Yeah.
But she said, hey, give you this. I got something for you. So she hands her like this giant folder full of information mm-hmm. on Faye.
Yeah.
And so Cheryl pretty much trades the food for the folder. Yeah, it's just like, hey, just take this.
Yeah.
I bet you never had collard greens with smoked turkey wings. And it's just like, no, I'll take it. And so that's the exchange.
Yeah, and she's walking out, and there's a guitarist on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And a butch black woman playing guitar, rocking out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the soundtrack for the last sequence of the movie. Well, the last, before the credits, at least.
Yeah, before the credits.
And it's a letter that Cheryl receives from June. And it's got a lot in there. First of all, she's angry that Cheryl brought up Martha Page in relation to this biography of Faye's life, saying, what does this white woman have anything to do with Martha's life, or with Faye's life?
Yeah. Her story is more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And also... playing that Mammy character brought a lot of pain into her mm-hmm. life.
And she had so much fun with the black productions, getting to play all the different characters, gangsters and other character types.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in the phone call in the beginning, not in the beginning, in June and Cheryl's first interaction over the phone, June asks Cheryl if she's, like, in the family.
Yeah.
So she reminds Cheryl that we have to tell our own history.
Yeah, as to you.
Yeah, and our family will always only have each other. That being black lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then... Cheryl talks in front of the camera to wrap it up. Mm-hmm. We learn that she separated from Diana.
Yep, they're no more.
We learn her and Tamara will hopefully work things out.
Yeah.
So that's what I was referencing before, where I said there's other interesting things with how it ends. The Tamara conflict never resolved.
Never resolved.
They just leave it hanging there. I mean, I hope they work things out, but I think it's so cool that they don't... like, she doesn't feel the need to have, like, a scene that slows down the momentum of, okay, let's be friends. Mm-hmm. I love you.
I like scenes like that,
though. Yeah, you felt robbed of resolution?
No, I didn't feel robbed. I'm just saying, I don't mind scenes like that.
Yeah. But in, like, this kind of movie, it, like, I don't know, it adds to the verisimilitude of...
Yeah, no, I think the mockumentary, having her wrap it up in this way serves the purpose of the picture better.
Mm-hmm. And then she was never able to make more additional contact with June beyond the letter that June sent her. She had hoped that she would be able to talk more. She has so many questions.
Yeah.
But she was able to make her documentary.
Yeah.
And she says to us, and I know you've been waiting, so here it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get some credits. And intercut with that is her documentary, which is in the Ken Burns style of pictures on the screen and narration about the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about Faye Richardson's life as you get the actors and the crew and then, like... more pictures and more story, and then like the name of the person that worked on all the fake archival footage.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And then they keep showing you more of the story. And I like, even after like confirming to the audience that, yeah, this is fake, they're just still doing it. They're still pushing it and like putting this character up on the pedestal.
I like the quote because the quote's just like,
sometimes you have to create your own history.
Yeah.
The Watermelon Woman is fiction. Charlotte Donnier, 1996.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what this is about.
That's about
she made her own history because
it wasn't there.
Because the history of black lesbians in Hollywood
wasn't represented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
so that's a really nice sentiment.
The people keeping history didn't deem it important enough to keep track of. That's the Watermelon Woman.
That's the Watermelon Woman.
Is the Watermelon Woman a movie or a film? I'm gonna say film.
Oh yeah, why?
I think it's a little messy. There's a lot of cuts in it that I don't like, where it just feels incomplete, but I feel like there's so much nuance and discussion of being a black lesbian that I think it pushes it to that frame, to that lens of being called a film.
Yeah, I'd agree with you with that film classification, and also say that any of those cuts, I mean, it's kind of a cop-out, but it's true. Anything with the filmmaking that you might think doesn't quite hit the mark could be attributed to the fact that the movie we're seeing is made by the character Cheryl,
mm-hmm.
even though the filmmaker Cheryl did make the movie. But the awkward cuts is what you would expect to see from that character putting together her first picture.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just saying I love it, and don't you dare say a bad word about the Watermelon Woman.
Damn. Okay.
Cool.
I won't say anything.
And I mean, we've talked about it throughout, but the whole Philadelphia-ness of it.
Yeah, surprise.
I didn't even mention Diana mentions moving. She moved from Chicago to Philly, just, you know, she was bored with Chicago. Just wanted to figure out what to do with her life.
She needed a mental health break.
Yeah, so check out The City of Brotherly Love and then...
Sisterly Affection.
You get The City of Sisterly Affection. I like that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's nice to see our city in movies. We're so close to New York City, and that gets all the movies, I feel like.
Yeah.
But Philly's got some good stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got this one in, because it does deal with Black history.
Yeah, it's a nice little segue.
And it is Black History Month next month. But unlike last year, where we did Selma, Ali, What's Love Got to Do with It, and Paris is Burning, we're going to celebrate Black History Month a little differently.
A little different.
So I'm glad we slipped this one in. We get some history and focus on some Black women. Because my hint for next week, and actually all month, Episode 100, we're going to be focusing
Episode 100?
On the male end of Black history. Of Black men.
Okay. All right.
We're going to talk about the men in Black history.
Yeah,
we're
going to
all month long.
That's terrible.
That's the hint.
That's the hint. All month long, guys.
So, you can tweet us at MovieFilmPod, email us moviefilmpod@gmail.com, wish us a happy anniversary, because 2 years.
2 years.
Episode 100's next 100 week.
100 episodes? This is crazy. This is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, come back to celebrate with us on movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film.